Welcome to the PBL Simplified Podcast, where we help your project-based learning vision come to life. You're a visionary leader that sees some changes that need to happen in education. And you didn't just see them, you didn't just talk about them, you raised your hand and said, hey, I'm ready to lead change in education. At a time where it might be difficult to do that. It's difficult to lead change anywhere. Like, we're talking about change process, we're talking about people. In general, people, we don't like to change. Now, it just so happens that you're leading a group of very passionate people that care deeply for the outcomes of kids. They want to have light bulb moments with their kids in their classroom. They want to provide new opportunities for their learners that they never would have had otherwise. So you're leading an amazing group of people, and you're leading them in an amazing direction. So I've always talked about on this podcast that as a visionary leader, you, one of your main roles is to do that, have a vision. We all want to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. So launch that vision. Now, do it purposefully. Don't just write it on a napkin in 3 minutes. Like, think through it, involve some other people. And, I mean, keep listening to this podcast, because I'm going to bring you people that have done this work. That's how we do it here at Magnify Learning. We bring you people that are in the work. We're not talking theory with PBL. We're talking about things that we've done in the classroom. Our resources are created by teachers in the classroom. And then they say, well, what about this? Can we add this? Say, yes, we can. And we adjust those resources. We've been doing that for almost a decade. So the resources we have are awesome. They're editable. Your teachers can use them. You can use them right away. Today, you're going to hear from Cynthia Bruno, who's a principal in Lexington, Kentucky, at an elementary school, doing amazing things. And she started with us at Design Days. So she came to our model school in Indianapolis. Her and her leadership team, we don't do things alone, right? Her and her leadership team went and saw high-quality PBL in action and then created a plan for their school. They did not copy the plan from us or from our schools in Indianapolis. They were inspired by what they saw. They were facilitated in the work. And then they came up with a plan that fits them, that fits their staff, that fits their learners. And it was awesome, obviously, because then they did a jump start and they just jumped in. Their teachers were so ready. They're rock stars. I've had them on the podcast. I'll mention it in this episode, so you can hit those episodes as well. So you can hear what they're doing with their learners. Today, you get to hear directly from their leader. And if you're a visionary leader and you're thinking about PBL, it's really your blueprint. Because you're going to hear Cynthia continually celebrate what her staff's doing, listen to her staff, covet and protect culture in a way that's so awesome. I'm going to ask her about fear. Like, didn't you have some fear about launching this? And her answer is absolutely priceless and completely changed my heart, I think, because she's scared of the status quo. So what if our kids left our building at a status quo and it was just traditional teaching? I can't handle that. She's like, she didn't say this, but I think I said it for her actually in the episode. Is like, I don't think I could sleep if our kids were just in traditional teaching. Like, the status quo is basically what scares Cynthia. Like, going out and doing change process? Yeah, I can do that. Because she's ridiculously courageous and humble. Those are two pieces that you need as a leader. She's got them. You're going to love this episode. You need to be in a place where you can take notes. PBL Simplified listeners, you are in for a treat today. We've got Cynthia Bruno on the podcast today, who is a high-flying principal who has brought PBL to her school, and she's done it with flying colors. And so we get to kind of pick her brain. And I've got some of your questions on here, listeners, as well as some of mine, because I want to pull a thread in a couple places too. So Cynthia, thanks for being with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about Dixie and the work that we've been doing.
Yeah, it's awesome work. And we first kind of met at UK Next Gen event. I think, am I right that you started like 2020, like COVID, like, is that when you first started your principalship at Dixie?
Yeah. Well, 2021. So right. Okay. It was still in COVID. We thought we were done, but we weren't.
Yeah. Cause you were virtual and right. So it's like trial by fire. And it's like, yeah, you get to do all these crazy things along with, you know, a change implementation in like instructional model and change process and a lot of unknowns. So I don't know. I'm excited to have you on the podcast to share all of that. Right. And just to see where we go with it. But we ask the very first thing we ask every podcast guest is, what is your why for education?
Yeah. So at Dixie, we say that, You know, we want our work to empower our students to be a positive force in our changing world. And really, that's my own personal why. You know, I really believe that students obviously need those academic skills, but we need to grow them as citizens. And, we want them to be creative problem solvers and people who can work with others. So really, it's just any opportunity we get to empower our students to feel good about changing the world.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's okay to say that we want our learners to change the world, right? And people are like, well, how are they going to do that? Like, man, let's try, right? Because let's find out. And right, like you see it, your learners can, and you're yes. K-5. Let's give a little bit of background to our listener. Like you're K-5, you got 575 kids. Mm-hmm. That seems like a lot to some people. I think a lot of people, you've got some unique pieces. You're diverse as far as race, mm-hmm. right? And socioeconomic pieces. You've got, you're a magnet school, but a 50-50 yes. magnet school, right? So am I right that like 50% are neighborhood and then 50% yes. are magnet?
Yes. Yeah. And there's no like entrance criteria for our magnet kids. So essentially if their parents just want a different experience for their kids and they sign up and get in the lottery and get chosen.
Yeah. And you're part of a larger district in Kentucky, right? So 40,000 yes. plus, right?
I think so. I just know about my school.
That's right. And that's totally your job, right? I just want to give some framework to our listener of like, hey, part of a bigger district, but then you're going to niche down and like, this is my building. This is what we do. This is our culture. And I think we're going to find out at the end of the day, like that's the foundation of the awesomeness that happens at Dixie, right? Yes. Is that portion.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's jump in. So you were just designated as a model school for Magnify Learning, right? We're super excited to put you on that path and in that place because, you know, we've got a podcast episode that just came out not too long ago, 142, where your teachers are talking. We've got another one from last fall. Like amazing things are happening. It seems like really quickly. So obviously there's some great things that were happening before this. How did you guys get started in project-based learning and deeper learning? How did that start for you?
Well, about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a committee created before I got there to revise the mission and vision statement and our magnet program. And the committee did an amazing job of researching and gathering student input and family and community input. And then they gave our community choices and they made a vote. They landed on personalized learning, which is very similar to deeper learning.
Yep.
And then COVID happened. So that work was put on pause because, you know, we were just in survival mode. And then I came along and, you know, when I first started, I met with all of our staff members individually for about 15 minutes to, you know, and asked for three things. So tell me your Dixie story. Tell me what you love about Dixie. And what are some challenges that we're facing or concerns that you have that I need to be aware of? And then as I was listening, I was taking notes. I compiled all that information and created some goals, three goals or commitments for us that have really remained the same over the past 3 years. But I realized that many of our staff were very concerned about our program, not really understanding what is personalized learning, what does that look like at the elementary level? Mm-hmm. And so really, I think back on it, we almost went through our own PBL. Is the first time I stood up in front of them, I said, like, this is a concern that you all have, and we have to figure it out together. So I reached out to the University of Kentucky and had Karen Perry and the amazing Lou Young come and visit us.
Absolutely.
And share about the components of personalized learning and resources and research. And I just asked the teachers, just dig in, pick one component that you're interested in and experiment with it. And at the end of the year, hopefully we'll figure something out that's going to work for us.
Yeah.
At the same time, we were going through UK Next Gen and we heard you talk about PBL. And I remember sitting around the table with the 10 staff members and we all looked at each other and we're like, this is it. This is something that we can implement kindergarten through fifth grade consistently and see this really as PBL is the foundation of our program. And so then we just jumped in and did the jumpstart. And I had, you know, two expectations for them. I had said, I want 2 units. So one in the fall and one in the spring, and then you have to do an expo night and then just let them go. And they learned a lot through that process. But we're just fully committed and really believe that this is what's best for kids.
Well, there's such a great roadmap in that story, right? Like there was a mission and vision that came from the community. We're like, what do you want? How can we best serve you, right? Community, students, how can we best serve you? So you springboard off of that and you say, you know what I should probably do? Listen, because that's what great servant leaders do, right? Listen, like where, and this is what I heard, everybody. Mm-hmm. How do we fix this, right? Like, now, how do I fix this? And then I love that you transparently ask for help, like outside help, right? It sounds just like a PBL, right? And say, hey, can you all, you all know some things. Can you come in, observe, and let us know what you see? And it's just such a learner mindset from top down, right? Like the adult, we always say that student culture does not rise above adult culture, right? So just at the top, you just adopt this mindset and you just watch it trickle down. I mean, even to the point, I love that it's like, hey, let's do an expo so it can be transparent. We can learn from everybody and we'll see what we learn.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And we had fun. I mean, it was messy. It still is messy, but, Our kids are having fun and so are our teachers.
Let's explain messy though, because not everybody understands that. I know what you mean by messy. Right. You don't mean that you've thrown standards out the window and you're just going to see what happens and right, wherever we land, right?
Right.
So can you try to draw out like what part of that's messy and what part is like non-negotiable type stuff?
Well, I think the messiness is just not, really, it's your first experience with teaching in this way.
Yeah.
I knew that, I mean, our teachers were very traditional, and I knew that asking them to do PBL was pushing them out of their comfort zone. And I knew, especially in that first unit, I knew because I'm fortunate that I have an amazing staff. I mean, just really high caliber teachers that are really committed to all students learning at high levels.
Yeah.
But this was asking them to do something very different. I knew that our kids would continue to learn, but I knew that the goal really for that first unit was going to be teacher learning. They just had to get through the process to figure out and reflect what worked really well and what do we need to change to make it better next time. And I just let them go.
Well, there's freedom in that, right? Like you're going to take a risk. And when you take that risk, I'm not expecting you to be perfect because it's new, but I do expect you to reflect, right? And we're going to grow together.
Yes.
And I think that's the part where I think sometimes there are some folks that will maybe criticize PBL and sometimes it's that messy word. And I know what you mean. So I just wanted to find out for our listeners that like, it means that the first PBL is not going to go well.
Right.
Not as well as you want it to, right? Like we're still gonna have assessments. We're gonna make sure that kids are learning things, but and then our safety net is the reflection, right? That we're gonna reflect on this. We're gonna grow. I love that you're giving your teachers that freedom to do that. It's such a great leadership move because that's how your teachers grow quicker, right? Because they're not so freaked out and they don't hold on to it so closely. They're ready to learn, and you're giving them that opportunity. So PBL starts working for your staff. Like, when did you realize that PBL is working for your staff and for your students?
I knew our first expo night. I saw for our kids, I saw how excited they were about their learning and to share it with others. And I saw it in our families, like how excited they were to be at school. And then just they saw the excitement for their kids. And so I knew like, okay, they're in. And then it was really nice in January when we came together as a staff to really reflect on our fall units. You know, we asked what went really well. And they all said, our kids are engaged. They are now invested in their work and have ownership over it. And our families are excited about what's happening here. And so that's when I knew really for the staff, okay, they see it too. And it really like hit home in the spring because in our Jumpstart training, I was sitting at a table with a team of teachers, and I knew, especially this one teacher, I was like, we're pushing her. Yeah. I knew she would try it. And she even in the fall closed her door after that first training and was like, what are we getting ourselves into? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
So they went through the first project and realized that there's some things that we need to change. And then their spring project, I mean, they knocked it out of the park, and yep. they did a Shark Tank unit in fifth grade. And as some of her students were presenting to the judges, mm-hmm. She was crying because she was just so, so proud of yeah. how far the kids had come and the way that they were presenting and communicating their ideas. It was just such a neat moment for her. And so she's like, I'm all in now. I've bought in.
Yeah. That's so good. Cause you know, we hear teachers like veteran teachers, right? They get into PBL and they're like, why haven't I been doing this for the last 15 years? Mm-hmm. And like, this is the way I've always wanted to teach. Like that phrase keeps coming up, mm-hmm. which is why I think it's so important kind of at the beginning of our conversation that you give teachers some room to try some things, right? To mm-hmm. have risk and to have a place to try these things out. Cause once they get it, mm-hmm. they're in and they're hesitant at first, but appropriately so, right? It's brand new. So you've got to give some emotional space there too. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. I just picture myself. I try to do this while we're doing the podcast is like, if I was a visionary leader, I'm leading a building, what would I want to hear? It's like families are excited. Students want to be at school, right? Like mm-hmm. my teachers are engaged. Like that just sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, you're right. I mean, I look back on it. This type of teaching is why I wanted to become a teacher. There aren't too many people that get into education that want to do skill and drill and worksheets and teach it standards in isolation, because that's not how real learning happens.
Yeah. That's such a good point. All right. So let's speak to the building leader. Let's speak to you. And like, when you make this jump, like, it's not the easiest jump, right? Like it's easier technically, like to stay with the majority, right? Do the traditional piece. We'll try to grow things maybe, and, or explain things away. So here's my question. How do you overcome the fear and that little voice in your head that says, you know, I want to move. I have a vision for an extraordinary school. I want to move from ordinary to extraordinary, but there's a little voice in your head that says, I don't know if you can do that, right? How did that work for you?
Well, I'm not really the kind of person who, I am the kind of person who's really excited about change.
Okay.
And okay. I'm somebody who just jumps in and like, just let's go full throttle. Let's do this. But I recognize that I have staff or I work with people who are not that way. And so I really cannot go as fast as I would like.
Yeah.
But for me, I guess that fear, it really comes from maintaining the status quo. Like I know that we have got to do school differently for kids in order for us to be successful as a community, as a state, as a nation. And traditional school is not creating the kinds of students that will eventually turn into very productive citizens and problem solvers. So there's really not a lot of fear for me in jumping in with this type of change, because I have that deep belief that this is what's best for kids. And, you know, when I met with the staff on those individual meetings, I mean, there were so many things that came out of those, but I realized, and this was before I saw any of them teach, like, I've got a lot of talent here and we are capable of amazing things. So immediately I just had a belief in them and their ability. And I think just sharing that with them, it was a lot of celebration when we came together for the first time, because I just wanted them to know, like, we do really hard work, but you all are really good at it. And I shared our goal, or our vision, I guess, is to be a national model for personalized learning at the elementary level in the next 5 to 10 years. And when I first shared that with them, I had no idea how we were going to get there. But I knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I share that with them even still to this day, all the time. I share that with our community partners that we bring in. Like, listen, you're going to be a part of something really special mm-hmm. here. This is about to blow up. I know we're doing good things.
Yeah.
And I feel like every decision that I make for our school or that we make together just inches us closer to that goal to be a national model. And so there's really not a lot of fear for me, I guess, in that way. I'm just very confident in the work that my staff is doing. I will say when I met with our superintendent the first time, because he started the same year that I started, and he asked me, one of the last questions was, what do you need? And I told him, I said, well, we're going to do things differently. And I need some time because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what our data is going to look like over the next couple of years, but I know eventually, like, we're going to prove to you that this is the way school should be done. Mm. I just need time. And he was like, okay. So, yeah. That's the only, I guess, fear that I've had is it's going to take time before we're able to see some success. Thankfully for us, it hasn't taken that much time.
Okay.
We're automatically seeing, I mean, we're seeing it now in our kids and what they're able to do and how they're performing. But still, I guess that fear is always there. But again, it's that commitment to knowing, like, we're doing what's right.
It's okay to say you don't have fear. I could see it. You know, yeah. I like it. You turned fear on its side, right? It's like, I fear the status quo, right? Like, that's what would keep me up at night. If I was just the status quo, like, I'd have a problem with that. Well, I think you're giving our visionary leaders, our listeners, permission to lead boldly too, right? Like, we have these bold goals. We all want to be a part of something bigger, right? And teachers are no different. Like, we want to teach exceptionally. And to do that, we need this big goal. And it sounds like you're giving that to your folks, you know, right off the bat. So, the superintendent, you kind of share that goal and with parents and with kids. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. I love that move of, hey guys, we've all got this large goal. Are you in? Like, yeah, I am in, right? That's so good. So as you're doing that, I would claim that you're building culture, right, around this vision that you've got. And I talk about in the podcast about, like, on the solar leadership, like, as a building principal, that's one of your main goals. Like, yes, you've got to figure out schedules. Yes, you've got staff. But one of your main goals is launching that vision because, you know, your second grade teacher isn't going to do that. That's not his or her job, right? Your job is to launch a vision and you're crushing that. What else do you do in your building to build that culture within your staff?
Well, we're very explicit about it. Like I said, after, you know, the first time I presented to the staff, I shared with them those three goals or commitments. And one of those was culture, because I heard them talk about the belief that they had in their teammates. They said, my teammates do great work for kids. Or whenever anybody in the school sees a problem or see a kid's in need, it doesn't matter your job title, we all jump in and help. So right there, I was like, ding, 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 we've got a positive culture here. Yeah. So, you know, I open it up with saying this is our biggest goal and will always be, or mainly commitment. You know, we're committed to a positive culture. And then I've just been very explicit of what does that even mean? Like, it means, you know, when you're walking down the hallway, you're making eye contact with your colleagues. You're saying hello, you know, everybody's name. And the culture is about, you know, how we talk to each other and how we talk about each other. Mm. And I say, I realize that I have a big influence on our culture, but it's not all me. Like, it's all of us together. And I talk to them about how we deal with conflict. Like, if something is going on, you feel some kind of rumbling with another staff member, you don't go and talk about it to everybody else. You deal with it with that person in a professional way. And then mainly, you know, I feel like kind of the protector of our culture.
Yeah,
so I have seen cultures go toxic very quickly because the principal is not willing to have those difficult conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I know that somebody is not acting in a way that really aligns with our culture, I pull them in and have a conversation with them about it, try to figure out what's going on, and then say, you know, you love Dixie. I know you do. And you know, culture is important. So how can we fix this? And it continues. I mean, we celebrate it all the time. We have an Under the Sea Award that we do, and we have a faculty meeting once a month. So the Under the Sea Award's a really big deal, and it's goes from one staff member to another. So whoever gets it that month, the next month, they find somebody to present it to, and they do all these creative, fun ways to recognize their colleagues. And then we have a rose ceremony that we do right after that, where we give out 12 roses, and it's celebrating those little things that we notice the staff do day in and day out. So not only are we very explicit about our culture and what it takes to nurture a positive culture, mm-hmm. but then also celebrate the heck out of it. When we see people doing things that support our culture, we want to name that and celebrate it.
Oh, that's so good. So I've got to add culture building as the principal's job as well, right? Because you can't just let them go by. Same thing with vision, right? You can't just let vision, you can't hope that it's going to happen. You can't hope that culture is going to happen. I love the idea that, you know, it's your job to have those difficult conversations, and it sounds like have them early, right? And they're already teed up. Like, this is what we do. So let's make sure we're all doing what we do to support that.
Yes. And all the success, honestly, that we've had over the past 2 years, I say it has been built on our strong culture. This, none of this would be possible without the positive, supportive, inclusive culture that we have.
Yeah, that's so good, because you guys are also excelling. Like, you're being recognized as well for the PLC work that you're doing as well. So, I mean, you're firing on all cylinders. Would you say that the culture comes first, or how is there an order, or does it all just come together? How would you talk through that?
Definitely culture. I mean, you have to be able to work together productively, and that can't be done without a positive culture. So everything starts there.
Yeah. And I would also point out that you said positive culture, but then you defined what that means, right? Like, the same way we would with a classroom walkthrough, like, what are your look fors, right? Like, here's our look fors and our positive culture. You should, like, I love how detailed it was. I felt like it was John Wooden detail. It's like eye contact, know everybody's name, right? Like, it seems basic, but these are the things that we do here at Dixie, and you're defining your culture. It's so good. All right. We could probably go on forever, I think, Cynthia. But what I really want to do is I want people to come see your school. I want them to come to Lexington. I want to host design days there. So if you're listening to Cynthia talk about the culture there, I want to get you there during school hours, right? So you can see this. You can talk to teachers. We'll get you a teacher panel. You can talk to Cynthia. You can talk to some of the learners. That's one of my favorite things of any tour is, you know, adults can always talk through buzzwords. You got to kind of like think through those, but not kids. Like, we are unfiltered, and you're going to get the real deal. So Cynthia, what's the best way for people to kind of get to peek at Dixie? Is there social media? What's the best way to follow the work you're doing?
Yeah, we're on Facebook mainly, at Dixie Magnet Elementary. And we're also active on Twitter. Mainly everything kind of lands in Facebook, because that's where our families are.
Yeah.
And then, anybody can feel free to email me. And, you know, I'm all about collaborating and sharing our work, because just like you, I believe that all kids deserve a PBL experience. And so we want to support schools in this work in any way possible.
Yeah, it's so great. And you guys just do what you do, and then the rest of us will come and join in and watch. So we've got a couple of other podcast episodes from Dixie Teachers. We'll put those in the show notes. We'll put Facebook and Twitter handles in the show notes too, so people can follow you. Cynthia, thank you so much for coming on the podcast to share your story. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, visionary leaders, you just heard another great example of a leader making it happen in her school and not doing it by herself, right? It's servant leadership. And if you're listening to this podcast, like, you get that, but I just want to be able to name it again so that you can confidently walk that out. You're going to confidently launch a vision. You're going to confidently defend your culture, define and defend your culture so that you can make room for your teachers to do amazing things so that your learners can have amazing experiences. And as you do that, you'll engage your learners, you'll tackle boredom, and you'll transform your classrooms so you can lead inspired. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the PBL Simplified Podcast. I appreciate you. I'm honored that you tune in each week. Would you please take 2 minutes to leave a rating and a review? When you leave a review, It lets the next person know that this is a podcast worth listening to. When they go into their player and search project-based learning and PBL Simplified popped up, when they see those reviews, they know that high-quality visionary leaders are listening. So they tune in too, and they can find their way into the PBL journey. Thank you so much for leaving a review. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you.